Today's podcast is brought to you by warbyparker.com. Get a free 5-day home try-on at www.warbyparkertrial.com/CNJRshow. 5 pairs, 5 days, 100% free.
Family, welcome to another episode of Chicken Jollof Writers Show. I am one of your co-hosts, Francis Merlin, Francis from MD, and I am actually in MD this week. I'm actually home, holding it down, actually in my own home, on my own couch. Like you know, there's just like, it ain't too often that I get to do a show from here. So, you know, might be a little bit of a... might really be chilling. In fact, I'm going to get a beer. So while I'm going to go get a beer, because I can open up my own fridge, I will send it out to my two co-hosts.
What up, what up? Lucy Fruity, holding it down for the Midwest as always. Hope everybody's having a good week, and let's start the show.
What's going on, y'all? We're back in here for another week. Lucy said, let's get it in.
All right. I'm back, and because I haven't been around my fridge, I opened up my fridge, and while I do have some amazing beer in there, I also have, all I'll say is I have a mason jar that's filled with something, and that's what today's show is going to be, what I'm going to be on during today's show, and I might need it for some of these topics. This year, one of the big things that is coming out that a lot of people have been excited about is the movie Birth of a Nation. Okay, so Nate Parker, the force behind the movie Birth of a Nation, why has this happened? And accolades have heaped on the movie. A lot of people become excited. An examination has really been put on Nate Parker, including a rape that occurred while he was in college, and that involved him and his college friends while they were at Penn State. So there's a lot in this transcript. It is very graphic. It turns your stomach. There's a lot there. And in fact, you know what? I won't start off that way. I'll just open it up in terms of other people's thoughts. I don't really want to start it off in terms of just putting all of my thoughts on it. So I'll open it up in terms of, has everyone seen at least part of the transcript that was, again, brought to the public's attention this week?
I looked at it, a little of it, and like you said, it's kind of weird to keep reading it because it's so disturbing. Now, I do not subscribe to Hotep-isms or the Hotep lifestyle, but there's actually, so there's no doubt about, after you read it, like, this is rapey, like, this is rape, that don't, this, there's no confusion about that. What is interesting, though, is I'm pretty sure this guy has, like, been famous, right? Or he's been in, like, he's been out for a while, right? So I'm also not sure what, excuse me, what provoked these, like, this to come out now. I don't know. Not saying that that matters. But I'm just like, oh, why don't, what, did something new, like with the Bill Cosby shit, there were actually like new allegations coming out and new people coming forward. So that was why like the allegations were brought up again, which makes complete sense because the guy that was a stand-up comic like made the joke about it and then other people started to come forward. It makes complete sense. So I'm not clear on what the provoking like thing was that made this kind of come to the forefront. A. B, there are people, so I don't go to the movies pretty much ever. When I heard of this movie coming out, I was like, oh, okay, so I'm going to be on time potentially early for this. Like, this is what I'm here for. So there are people talking about how now they can't support this film because he's in it. It's like that same R. Kelly creepy shit where people are like, fuck R. Kelly, can't support his music anymore because he's a creep. I obviously still like R. Kelly and think he's a piece of shit. Don't know this Nate person personally, but from what you read, he's also a piece of shit. I'm still going to see this movie. So I don't know if the controversy is like what we get behind and whether the timing of when these, you know, allegations or, you know, things that could be, you know, tearing a black man down and whether or not the timing is suspicious, you know, affects whether or not we're going to support them. I, like I said, don't give a fuck. Still going to see this movie. He can go to South Hell because this girl has apparently had issues and stuff since, and I can't fuck with that.
She committed suicide in 2012.
Did she? Okay, I thought she attempted suicide, so I didn't know if she...
I am pretty positive. Yes, committed suicide in 2012.
Oh, okay, well, that's even the further... South in hell where he will be. So, once again, not thinking about that when going to see this film that is so incredibly important. I didn't give a fuck about his roles in these other movies. I think he was in, was he the one with the Tuskegee Airmen?
He was in like The Great Debaters with Denzel. I think he was in that, he was in that swimming movie, Pride.
Yeah, so he's been in other, like, blackety-black movies, whatever. Yeah. I'm still going to see the film because of what the meaning of the film is, and he will still be a piece of shit when the credits roll, and that's where I stand.
So this is one of those really, really weird things where I think there is several elements at play, where one of them is that people were looking for some semblance of contrition from him. It just didn't seem like he was... remorseful at all in the transcripts of any conversations that people have read with him recently. Basically, it's almost like it's being dismissed as something that happened almost 2 decades ago and he's moved on with his life. So I think that is part of the problem, especially people who have been victims of that. Something that probably would go a long way for somebody in that situation is that contrition. Now, do we think that the person can actually change and actually be a different person? A lot of people don't think that you can. They think that once you slip into a place that dark that you're always going to be there. It's just really a matter of suppressing it, so to speak. Kind of like Dexter trying to suppress his urge to kill people. It's like, you know, that piece of shit is in there. You're just not showing it to us because you know you need to keep it at bay. I don't know necessarily where I fall on any of this. In that particular regard, because, I mean, I do think that people can change. I just don't think that as many changes we would like. So I'm not making any judgments one way or the other about whether he's actually changed or whether he's a different person. There's people who say that he didn't do it and it was the other guy, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. I don't care if he didn't do it. He maybe was complicit in it. I don't know. Either way, none of it looks good. And I think that if he showed some kind of remorse, that maybe people wouldn't have been so hard on him. Maybe he would be in a better position right now. I don't know. But the idea that people who are in the spotlight, who have money, they can do things like that and get away with it, and it's just fine, I think that bothers a lot of people.
Well, I disagree a little bit in that he could show remorse and people would maybe let things go a little more. Because if there's one thing that I've learned as an adult is that there are plenty of people, when we look at society at large, who like to completely condemn people on absolutely despicable acts and make it that they can never, no matter what they do, they can never redeem themselves. So I was, as I started to express already, I was reading it is... say, It turns your stomach. I understand when people said that reading the transcript or the avoidance of the transcript because they were afraid it would be triggering, but some read it, started reading, and said it was triggering. There's a graphic description of what was taking place. And I am a person who is abhorred by what happened. And I am the same person, I've talked about this previously, how I am also human, and there's some people who I draw a line on and some people who I don't. Like Lucy, I am absolutely abhorred by him personally. I still want to see this movie. I have talked previously about other people, talked about people like Roman Polanski and Miles Davis and Woody Allen, and I've talked about Aretha Franklin and the Reverend James Cleveland, who have done absolutely despicable, and we've obviously talked about R. Kelly, that absolutely despicable acts, and depending on the person, on who you are, there are lines that you draw with different people. I don't know if an act of contrition would do anything. Yes, what Lucy alluded to earlier in terms of the hoteps is like, or hotep way of thinking as well, this is already out. Why is this now being a big deal put out there? Is because this black man is putting out this movie that's considered great, but it's putting this form of view that might be construed against white people and so forth, and so now they're doing everything they can to destroy him. I guess I see that line of thinking, but at the end of the day, based on reading the transcript, he raped and his friend and his co-writer. That's the other thing. The two of them are connected to this movie. Raped a woman who was not in a position to appear to be in a position, based on the transcript, to say no or to give consent. I don't know how you can then say, well, this is only coming out because of this, but it doesn't change what's in the transcript. None of that changes what's in the transcript. So, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm going to boycott. I have an interest in seeing the movie. I also think it's absolutely abhorrent. I also find the hole in the argument, while, yes, maybe somebody did try to start something and say, well, to try to sabotage the movie. But it doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, a woman's life was irreparably changed, and I'm not going to make the connection because I can't. I don't know what else happened in her life. It's very easy to make the connection between that act that night and the fact that she committed suicide. I refrained from doing so, though I think I am also a person who would, in my own mind, would be like, I'm sure that that is a factor. But I won't say that that's definite. But at the end of the day, they committed something that was so heinous that whatever backlash, whatever comes up on them, they made that decision then when they had no regard for that woman, where all of this and whatever repercussions come from them don't still add up to what she suffered from that evening on. And never will.
Yeah, I know. There's no such thing as a catch-all. I just know that based on what some people have voiced in the aftermath of this, it just seems like that would have gone a long way for some people. Like, if R. Kelly would have said, hey, you know what? I was a troubled man and I did some messed up stuff. Because at the end of the day, people already think and believe that she did it, regardless of what actually happened. Because, I mean, I can't say with 100% certainty about any of this shit because I wasn't there. All I'm doing is piecing it together based on the evidence that we have. But if some people show some remorse and show, like, some kind of effort to be better or to, you know, like, they're not just skating by with all of their millions of dollars and all of these people are suffering silently. And, you know, I get where some people are coming with that. I don't think like you were alluding, I don't think it changes what happens. I don't think it erases it. It doesn't make it better, per se. But I think it's just this idea that here's another man that did some fucked up things to a woman, and he just gets to skate and move on with his life. Meanwhile, her and her whole family had to suffer for it. So, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I was excited about the movie, too, but I'm very conflicted. I'm conflicted about R. Kelly's music. I'm conflicted about Chris Brown's music. I mean, I'm conflicted about a lot of things. I don't expect people to be perfect, but I think I have a certain threshold for heinous things that they can do. And sexual assault is pretty high up on that list. I don't know if I can really be comfortable with that. So, I don't know. Here we are.
Actually, I agree with Wordsmith in the sense that I actually do think him showing some contrition would have made a difference to the people that are now stumbling across what happened. Obviously, it doesn't make a difference to the victim or what actually happened, but it does matter, in my opinion. That said, it doesn't make any difference to me in terms of seeing the movie. It wouldn't have. Just like the R. Kelly thing doesn't make any difference to me and listening to his music. To me, I separate who you are from your art. So it never impacts me in that manner. But that said, I never had planned to see the movie in the first place, and I still don't. I'm off slave movies. I'm off it. So I don't care if it'll be good or great or terrible. I'm not going to see it. I will wait for a black movie that is not slave-inspired or slave-themed, and I'll go see that instead. My own personal opinion, I'm not going to sit here and get on some kind of moral horse or whatnot, or even explain it in more depth than I already have. That's just how I feel about that. So the Nate Parker thing, that's awful, but it did inspire some interesting debate in terms of consent. And I don't know if you guys had planned to get into that, but I thought that there was some interesting points and interesting things that I learned that I had no idea about in terms of the legality of consent and whatnot I thought was interesting.
Well, get into it. I mean, some of the things that
So what I found interesting about the whole thing, let me just give a little bit of background on what happened. When this thing came up, and I want to say it was either a couple of days ago, the debate about consent came about. And what normally happens on Twitter is, we jump into the extremes and hyperbolize everything, so no real discussion can happen. But one of the things that did trickle out of it was talking about where is consent actually given, who can give consent, and in what state. And in state, I mean in terms of state of inebriation. And the difference between being blacked out and being unconscious. And that's one thing that I had never known. I never knew there was a difference. So what happened was people got into a debate with another tweeter that is, or at least presents himself as a lawyer who does deal with these types of trials and also does teach these types of scenarios and instances when it happens in court. So I've actually found what he said to be credible, just based on the things that I've heard and learned and just know from experience, or not necessarily experience, but from what I've heard. And so I found what he said to be credible. But there was a lot of folks who took issue with not only what he said, but the manner of which he was saying it, which I will agree with them in the fact that the way he presented his knowledge was in an insensitive manner to a really sensitive topic. So I can understand the frustration with that. But I also did think that what he said was seemed to be pretty accurate from my understanding of just legal issues and the law and what you can prove and what you can't prove. So I think I'll stop there, and I don't know if any of you came across that discussion or what you thought of it.
Well, what did he say?
He was saying that when you black out, you aren't necessary. That doesn't necessarily mean you're unconscious. It means you actually are no longer able to record memories. So basically, the next day you won't have memory of what happened. And in that state, you aren't necessarily not you can't prove that you did not consent when you were in that state, because the person who is with you does not know that you are blacked out unless you are unconscious.
Gotcha.
The way he phrased it in some of his tweets made people really irritated, because he did say at what point blacked out you can consent.
Which, no, that makes sense how you just explained it. It makes complete sense. Because I think I've talked about...
That's what he said, and when he was fleshing it out, that's what he meant. But then when we're trying to get it across in 140 characters and everybody's coming at your throat, you can take shortcuts in your explanation, and then it comes off really bad. Because if you say someone that's blacked out can consent, that sounds really bad. You know, so...
Yeah, I mean, so I used to be a pretty avid drinker, if I do say so myself. Like, I came in the game late as far as drinking, and then I just dove in, you know. Changed my ways now, but I always had a very high tolerance for alcohol. And so I would drink and, you know, kind of drink the same amount as, you know, someone else. And I used to be, like, fairly skinny. And I would see other girls or whatever out, and, you know, they're stumbling on themselves or falling and crying in the bathroom and, you know, making out with guys, you know, they just met. And I always thought, like, I used to think that was an act. I used to think that people were, like, acting drunk, because I would be just drinking and, like, chilling. And then, you know, I've had people that I've gone out with who did that stuff. Like, oh, they were making out with a guy in the club, and then I asked them about it the next day, like, did that guy call you? And they're like, what guy? And I'm like, girl, you don't remember just being enamored with this man, like, that you left the group for, that you're just with the whole night? And I literally used to think that girls or anybody, guys, girls, who would say they don't remember what they were doing, I literally thought that was a lie, like, that people just said that to excuse themselves from, like, the dumbass behavior that they were doing when they were drunk. Because I never experienced it, I literally thought it was fake. And just like Anne once said, the person is, like, talking, the person is looking at you, the person is, like, dancing. So to you, I mean, they look like they're okay. So you don't know that, like, tomorrow they're not going to remember any of that, because they're actively participating. So it's just you telling them, like, no, you were dancing on the table, bitch, and then, like, security carried you out. Like, you're telling them what happened last night. And they, honest to God, are looking you in the face like, I don't remember any of that. So if somebody's telling you, you know, to do A, B, C, D, and they're in that state, there isn't a way to know, like, tomorrow are you going to black out? Like, or tomorrow are you going to remember any of this shit or not? There isn't a way to know what type of drunk somebody is, or to know if they're even drunk. Because I know for a fact I can be drunk and I'm the only person in the room that knows I'm drunk. So it's just such a weird state. And alcohol is so commonly used, like, everybody drinks. Like, it's not even just like, oh, it's like a PCP thing. This is alcohol that everybody uses, you know? So there's no definitive way to know. And then there's always people who have one situation when they were drinking one day and they were cool. Then next week when they're drinking around the same people, you know, same type of alcohol, have a different, you know, experience. So then you can't even go by past things, like, with the same person. So it could be we were cool and it was all right with everybody last weekend, and now this weekend I don't remember telling you that you were cool to come home with me. You know, so I just, I don't know. Rape culture sucks. It's terrible. It discourages people from coming forward if they had been drinking and then they do feel violated when they wake up. But, and I'm not, I hate to be this person all the time on the show, but being a person that can control my alcohol, like, I just look at people who haven't been able to kind of figure out how much I should drink and who I should drink around, such that I'm not sure if I'm going to, if I'm the type of person that is not going to remember what happens to me. And again, I'm not saying that it's up to you. Obviously, a rapist shouldn't rape, right? But then I just wonder, in every case, is that person trying to take advantage of you because you are drunk, or they are also drunk, you're drunk, and now we're just, oh, we're making out, and it goes further because we've both been drinking, but I remember and you don't, you know? So I just,
It's a minefield.
It just, I don't know. And there's no way that you, how can you test somebody on that beforehand? Like, before you leave the club, like, oh, okay, what kind of drunk are you? Like, you blackout drunk, you unconscious drunk. Like,
but see, that's the thing, though, too, because, all right, I've talked about this on the show before. I have a high tolerance to the point that I have never been buzzed or drunk in my life. And what's that's done, besides, in some ways, my friends taking advantage of the fact they're like, oh, well, shoot, if Frank's out with me tonight, then I can do whatever I want. But what it's done for me personally is it's changed my interactions when I have been in situations with the opposite sex where I have a, we're not doing anything if I see it, like, I have my own, like, subjective thing. Like, well, if she's had, like, this many drinks, or if I see a wobble, or anything. Like, you could have, like four drinks and not show anything. And I'm like, nah. Because for me, it's almost like I am, because of how I've always, and I've had this thought since I found this out in college, I had this high, what do you call it? It's been the same thing where I was always cognizant of it because I never knew, and maybe it's because I come from a family of lawyers or so forth, where consent somehow got drilled into me early. But I never knew if the person would be able, would be really be able to give consent. And also, because I am not in any way affected by what I'm drinking, and even if I'm drinking a little bit, but if I'm not in any way affected by it, it seems unfair. Like, that was just the simple, rudimentary way to look at it. So it seemed unfair that I would have, that I could trust, and this is in some ways even, there's a line there between ridiculous or just assuming, where I am taking on the role of consent for someone else, or that person's definition of consent for someone else, because of the fact that I can't get buzzed or drunk. So because of that, I am saying, well, I'm just not going to do shit. Like, we just gonna stop this right here. We can pick this up tomorrow or whatever. And it's its own minefield, because even then, am I really respecting that person in terms of consent that they can get, that they're giving? I would say maybe not. But I made the choice for myself that I was never going to put myself in any position where the question could come up. And so when you think about these other situations where you're out with your friends and so forth, and like Lucy said, like, hey, man, you all right? Like, yeah, I'm good, yo, you know, so forth. Or, are you okay? Yeah, I'm all right. Like, either way, it doesn't matter if it's man or woman, and you're out with them, and you're like, but, and they're talking to someone, you're always wondering, but in that situation, unless I feel that person is a danger, I can't really insert myself in that into that situation. Like, I am some almighty judge of consent. I can just say, when it comes to myself, all right, you know what? I'm just going to be like, I'm going to go and have such a huge line that I'm just not going to cross it because that's the choice that I'm making personally.
There are definitely some situations where it can be tricky, like you guys just explained. I totally get that. The big problem for me are the people who basically try to use alcohol to lube women up and get them ready to do something. I think that's like kind of predatory, and I think a lot of people have been conditioned to think that, oh yeah, you know, I buy a couple of drinks, she'll loosen up, blah blah blah, we go do this, and think that that's okay. But it, when you step back and think about it, that's actually kind of creepy and predatory, and people have to stop thinking that way and stop behaving that way, because I feel like that leads to a lot of trouble right there. And that's not even talking about people slipping roofies or anything into the drinks, too. That's another level of fucking disgusting creep. But just even this idea that, like, yeah, I'm going to buy a couple of drinks and then I can go do whatever I want to. Or, like, you, if you stop and think about it, that's some really creepy shit to do and say.
Guys are just creepy in general. No offense, guys. But it gets weird because when two people are drinking and two people are drinking a lot, like I said, it might be affecting one person differently than the other one. And I think that's where it gets weird, because now both people's judgment is impaired. Like, both people are actually not, you know, using their sober mind. And so I guess to me, like, the guilt lies on if that's done in, like, a predatory manner, like, if that's the intent is to get you more intoxicated than I am so that this becomes easier for me, or this wouldn't be able to happen if you were not drunk or you were not drinking, because obviously people drink and then are intimate with each other. I mean, Beyonce just made this whole song about it, and then Jay-Z came in. I'm not trying to, like, simplify it, but we know that that is a thing people are doing. Like, that's just a thing that people are doing. So at what point do you have to get to where Francis is, where you just, if a girl is just walking funny or she's slurred a little of her speech and she's off limits, then if a guy's, you know, stumbling or whatever and slurring his speech and a girl goes home with him, like, is she raping him if they're together? I don't understand.
Well, it does.
I wouldn't even know what to tell, like, my nephew. I wouldn't even know what to say, like, oh, if you woke up with a woman and you don't remember what happened, like, she raped you. I don't know.
But it's crazy sometimes because the act of, and this is, and listen, okay, I am not saying this in terms of, well, you know, sometimes women do this to men too. I'm not saying it like that. It's not coming from that spirit, though the example does go along those lines. In that, hey, I know what's happened to me before where, and don't get me wrong, I'm not going to sit here and act like I might not have enjoyed it or so forth in some ways where it was like, but you have someone who you're intimate with. That person maybe goes out, comes back, they come back and they are, you know, pretty drunk, but maybe you're asleep. Next thing you know, you wake up and things are happening. For me, that was always, again, based off of what I just said, that was always a fairly interesting situation because, you know, it's I have a line. And just because, even if it's someone who I'm really intimate, like, there's a point where, you know, you're concerned about them and everything. Like, I have all of these other questions that come into my head, naturally. But the issue of consent, when we all know about, particularly on college campuses, this whole discussion in many ways is spurred by the release of a transcript of an incident that happened during college on a college campus. where the prevalence of sexual assaults, I know people who I'm close to in my life who, or people who I'm not close to anymore, but who were sexually assaulted while in college. And some people have, and now there's been a little bit of a spotlight on it. The president and vice president have put together task forces focusing on this and so forth. But it is, in some ways, we look at it through a lens where society almost accepts that as, well, it's a still boys will be boys, this will be this, so forth. Is the reaction progress in terms of how we're looking at sexual assault in all forms? Or is it like I said, okay, we just want to be on the side? Because in some ways, it's the opposite of what is accepted. It is still accepted that sexual assaults will happen on campus. And colleges routinely continue to put women in a position where they are held responsible for their own sexual assaults. Not only colleges, sometimes parents and family members or friends, but especially in the administrative situations, they are put in situations where the administration or the rules of the college put the onus on the woman for pretty much taking the blame for her own, for the assault that occurred that happened to her.
So I have a question for you guys. You're a guy. Do you think that rape culture, like especially on college campuses, is in direct relationship with underage drinking?
No.
Or drug abuse at all?
No.
Okay.
There's a connection there.
Ask that again?
I'm just asking, do you think, like, if you're talking about colleges, like, I don't know the literature, what it says on this, but are, like, the rates higher, or do you see a correlation where it's schools where there's a higher amount of underage drinking, like illegal drug use and drinking, and sexual assault? Like, do you think they're related?
It's hard to say because I do think they can be directly related. I don't know that I would say, I don't know if I could say that removing one would remove the other. So it's not like one wouldn't happen with one without the other, but I do think that they can be, you know, there can be a causation with that.
I agree there with that. There can be direct causation in some ways, but I look at it as it is how women are thought of, because, and the reason why I said is what I've just pointed out, is that the administration's or these colleges' reactions when the rapes are reported, or when someone tries to come forward, or the resources that are available. Because I think that a lot of times the onus is put on the victim, and obviously in most cases it is a woman, but the onus is put on them to either swallow it, to either back down from the thing, to even face potential repercussions. Because as a friend of mine pointed out, and some other people have pointed out before, some of these colleges might have honor codes or this or that, and if you do this, oh, well, you're violating this code, and now you're facing expulsion or some disciplinary action. I think that the colleges themselves make it that I can't think that drug use and alcohol are the biggest factors in it, because the rules and the culture that is fostered on these campuses are often make it so that victims are not in an area where they can feel safe or they can feel that they can get the resources after such an event occurs.
On something you said earlier, Lucy, you were talking about what you would try to tell, like, your nephew. And I actually thought about that, too, a little bit, in the sense that, you know, I do have, you know, children and that the conversation will come up. And from my vantage point, I think what I would end up having to say is that you have to, one, not put yourself at risk. So to me, I would say do not even attempt to have any kind of that relationship in that manner with someone who has been drinking at all. And I think that's kind of, that's honestly really the only way to.
See, the thing is, like, that's, is that realistic? So this is what I'm, all I'm saying is, people drink, like, people actually drink to whatever. They drink socially. So a lot of people aren't sitting at home drinking by themselves, unless you like the old me and you just depressed and don't give a fuck about people. Otherwise, you out in the world, like, you're drinking with friends, or you're drinking with, you know, maybe a couple friends and then people you just met. And, like, you know, especially when you're younger, like, you know, you, it's at the forefront, like, of your social interactions is like drinking. So,
but I wouldn't go as far as to say it's unrealistic. I mean, I didn't do a ton of drinking in college myself. So,
but I'm sorry.
I didn't do a ton of drinking in college myself.
I didn't drink at all, like Francis.
I also have a really high tolerance, and I think when you do have a high tolerance as a man, you are already in jeopardy when you're talking about trying to.
But there are guys who also. Like, there's tolerance in the sky high. So if they've been drinking beer after beer after beer, then, like, yes, like, if they've been drinking and the girl they're interested in has also been drinking, I'm talking about situations like that where, like, both parties have been drinking, so both people don't have the wherewithal to be like, oh, my gosh, I've been drinking. Like, I shouldn't be – we should both just go home our separate ways. Like – people are just like, oh, awesome, I've been drinking, you've been drinking, let's go home together.
How can you not put yourself in such a situation? Like, that's one of the things I was talking about, where sometimes even parents have make it apparent, like, if you are in a room, and generally what happens is it's directed towards their daughters. If you are in a position or a room, don't put yourself in this position, or don't be in this room.
This is the thing. My solution, what I would tell my kids, you actually just have to have friends. So the consumption of alcohol, kind of like what you're saying, and one that they're not, you can't really, I guess, blame one on the other, right? Because there are people who drink in groups, and they're never sexually assaulted. And there are people who have been sexually assaulted while completely sober. But in these situations where the memory is a part of it, like, to me, what's disturbing is the girl and actually asking him, hey, what happened to me? Like, her not even knowing how many people she slept with. Like, to me, that's different from the situations where you're like, oh, my gosh, I was raped. He looks like this. You know, I kept saying no. These are like two different situations, because that type of rape where you know his name, you knew you said no, and you know, that's completely different from being like, now what happened now? And you actually asking the person who did it what happened. That, to me, that's something, I'm not saying that it's completely avoidable, because it isn't. But if you have friends, then I'm not letting my girlfriend go anywhere with niggas. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if it's just a lot of us, okay, we came together, we're leaving together. The same way, if you're a dude and you see your dude, like, pressed up on a girl that she, you know, she kind of looks out of it, you're supposed to be like, bro, like, we gotta go. Like, come on, man. Like, it's literally about letting people kind of go off on their own. You know, and then now, if I'm your friend and you're telling me that these guys took advantage of you, you can't actually even tell me what happened. You cannot describe to me what happened, because you don't remember. You know, so I can't even say, okay, yeah, you know, I can't vouch for you or anything, because all I know is you said you wanted to stay and we left.
I think the friends thing for me is troubling, and I agree with you to an extent that yes, you do definitely want to have your close friends with you whenever that situation does come up. What's troubling to me is that the time that friends step in that scenario is when you're uncharacteristically drunk. From my experience, the times where people have been drinking and, you know, they seem fine and consenting, they've been drinking, they're like, they're fine, they've just been drinking, they're not drunk or whatever, or they seem normal, or in some ways normal in the way where they are when they drink, then your friends kind of will let you, as two consenting adults or two consenting young people, they will let you go on and go about your business. They won't really step in. It's only when someone seems uncharacteristically drunk or, you know, just completely off their ass.
But then, even then, it is still, you are then relying on the facts, or you're relying on the hope, really, that one of your friends is not, at least one of your friends is not that drunk, or has a high tolerance or something. So, right. Or is at least paying attention. Like, there's too many variables there that you're right. relying on with the, I feel like Lucy is right in some ways, but then I feel like there's so many variables that you're relying on with the friend solution.
I'm not saying it's a solution, because I honestly think, like we've talked about on these type of shows before, there isn't a solution. Like, this just, it happens, right? So we talked about the R. Kelly situation, and we talked about Bill Cosby, like, there isn't a solution. And, you know, just like Ann once said, I think on the previous show, like, it's not that simple just to be like, teach boys not to break, you know? Like, we realize that that's not cutting it, right? But I do feel like until we better understand what happens with alcohol and memory, you know, we don't have many other solutions, right? So, like I said, I've never blacked out, and I've consumed a shit ton of alcohol at once, but I've never woken up like, I was doing that? I was like, I've never had that happen before. So, to somebody who knows that they wake up from the night before and other people are telling you, like, the shit you were doing, you know, if you know you have a friend that does that, then, yeah, I guess the onus just is on you. Like, you know that your friend blacks out. So, you know, if that's going to be your friend and you go out with them and you drink with them, then they kind of are a little bit your responsibility. Like, I honestly, I have two friends like that. And I feel responsible. Well, one, I feel more responsible for than the other. But, you know, I keep an eye on her, you know? So it's just,
That's me, too. I keep an eye on all my friends. Well, it's kind of a designated thing. That's me. So I get you. Well, all right. Well, obviously, we can keep going on this, family. Let's take a break here, and we'll be right back.
For you, the listeners of the Chicken and Jollof Rice Show, Warby Parker is offering a free 5-day home try-on to give you the opportunity to check out their glasses. Go to warbyparkertrial.com/CNJRshow. Again, that's warbyparkertrial.com/CNJRshow for your free 5-day home try-on.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Chicken and Jollof Rice Show. We have embarked on a new era in the year. Some people like this time of year. Some people don't fucking understand it. And what that is football season. That's right. Somehow, if you're new to the show, I am the sports correspondent for the Chicken and Dollar Fry Show. How is that possible when you don't know anything about sports, you ask? I don't fucking know, guys. Now, what I do know about sports is that last year, Cam Newton, who plays for a team that I think wears blue and white, they were winning a lot. And he's black and a quarterback, which is rare. And white people aren't that into that. But he's really good. And so he's very young and like charismatic, and when he would score or other people on his team would score, I don't know. He would dab. I do remember that. He would dab or he would like dance, and you know white people just not that into that, and they don't like the celebrations or whatever, so then they were like, I mean, just go out there and play the fucking game. We need to see your fucking dances. You know, but I think he kept doing it, and it kind of looks unsportsmanlike, or it looks like you're bragging or whatever. Fast forward to, they were in the Super Bowl, right? It was either the Super Bowl or maybe like the second to closest to Super Bowl. I don't know. But they lost. And, you know, he didn't answer the questions or whatever. And people were like, see, there he goes again, being unsportsmanlike. And so he got all this, like, negative attention. And people were like, look, you're just doing that because he's black and he's young and he's charismatic. Like, leave him alone. He's ours. Black people are magic. Black Lives Matter. So then, you know, everybody came to his rescue. He dresses really crazy. We, like, overlooked his loafers and stuff. And fast forward to this week, he comes out with an interview in GQ. You guys, I didn't read this whole article, but there's parts of it where he's being ridiculous. So the gist of it is he's like, I don't know why people like focus on race, like racism is not a thing, like we're past that now, and you know, whatever, go whatever team I'm on. So obviously, Black Twitter, who swooped in to rescue this dude every time he was getting dragged by the main media that was like, oh my gosh, he's dabbing and that's symbolizing drug use. And oh my gosh, is that a do-rag he has on? What, you know, every time they did that, niggas swooped in and, you know, were like, leave Cam alone, black excellence. This nigga actually has said this is not racism anymore. So collectively, Black Twitter was like, oh, okay, well, then next time you're getting shitted on national TV, we're actually going to look the other way. So I'm not sure what happened, if he got threatened, like his money got funny, and they were like, look, this year, none of that dab shit, okay? Just, we don't want to see any of that. We don't want to see, don't moonwalk or whatever you niggers do now. Don't do any of that shit. We just want you to score the points and win. And he came out, you know, tap dancing and said, we're good, everything's fine, none of that had to do with me being black. So yeah, he got likened to OJ and some memes. It wasn't good. It wasn't good. I was into him for the 12 minutes that I really knew who he was. So if I'm not supposed to be into him anymore, then I'm okay with that. Thoughts, fellas?
Well, here's my biggest issue when it comes to athletes and entertainers and et cetera speaking up, because a lot of times people will complain that they're not using a platform to speak out on behalf of, you know, underserved communities or oppressed communities, et cetera. And then you'll have people that'll speak out, like Cam did, and they'll get maligned for saying ignorant things. Now, they are still regular people. We've talked about this on the show, and I'm sure a lot of you have had these conversations outside of here, that they're regular people. They're not all Mensa candidates just because they're entertainers and that they're famous for whatever it is that they do. That does not make them the smartest people on the block. They're still one of us. So there are still a lot of lessons that a lot of these people have to learn. And one of the biggest lessons that they need to learn is discernment. Because especially now with the racial climate being what it is in America, for you to come out and say that there is no racism, that goes beyond a difference of opinion. That's just fucking stupid. That shit is not true at all. There's people out here suffering, and there's a whole bunch of fucked up shit happening, and maybe it's not affecting him in the sense of racism as it existed during Jim Crow era and all of that type of stuff, but don't act like this shit is not real. Don't act like people don't give a fuck about race. Think about how many people still get called niggers and still get called all types of fucked up things by white people just because they're black and nothing else. Maybe he doesn't know what it feels like to walk into a room full of white people and feel like they're staring at you, staring holes through you, and wondering how the hell you got there and all types of shit. Like, maybe it doesn't affect him, but this shit is real. I don't know where he gets this idea that racism doesn't exist anymore and that it's some type of fictitious phenomenon that black people are bringing up now just because have something to complain about. Like, this is fucking, it's ludicrous. So that goes beyond I'm not as well informed. Like, you know, there's certain heteronormative vocabulary that people use, and somebody will come along and try to teach you differently. That's the learning opportunity. This shit right here is just fucking dumb, and I don't even know how to excuse it.
Man, even Charles Barkley, with his empty fishbowl head ass, won't say that there isn't racism. I mean, I'm still pissed off. Like, what the fuck, Cam? Of all people, with everything that you went through last year, lady writing letters talking about that you shouldn't dance and all that. And we were all writing so hard for Cam. We were all, you know, we hashtag dab on them folks. We made Carolina the Black Panther team because they just
happened to be the Panther.
They were supposed to kick off Black History Month. This is supposed to be the greatest Black History Month ever.
I mean... And none of us give a fuck about Carolina.
No, we don't.
For the majority of the time that they even have existed in Carolina Panthers. And we just like, okay, this cat, I'm just dumbfounded. I was dumbfounded by that comment. It's just like, you got to be out of your goddamn mind. And I don't even give the excuse if someone says something to you, then you should just shut the fuck up and not say nothing about it at all.
Listen.
You're not here for this shit.
Listen.
I'm so off right now, man.
I don't even know shit about football, and I know, like, you know what I'm saying? I'm into dancing, so I'm like, yo, you're not going to take away his right. You know, I was like, fuck that. Bless this nigga dab. Let him Millie rock, you know,
right.
If he needs Millie. Yeah. Like, we were just like, this is black excellence and expression of our excellence. I don't even know what fucking team you play for, my guy. And I was like, yes, this dude.
We all turned on Lucy. We all turned on Lucy because of him too. Because we were like, nah, you can't root for Peyton Manning.
That's right. I remember that. We were all on here like, Lucy, get your ass.
There's a reason. That's the reason why Lucy is the official NFL correspondent.
The devil is a liar, and he knew.
You saw it.
He knew that Cam was going to
Lucy
front
had
on
sight
us.
Beyond sight.
Lucy,
he knew Cam was going to front on us later, and God said, you know what, just stick to Peyton Manning. Like,
Lucy, your football third eye.
He has. Keep your third eye open.
That's why now, but that's all part of why you the sports correspondent, official sports correspondent for the show.
It's not easy. You know, it's not easy, but these are the things that I foretell and that I can see. You know, Cam was really, he was just playing with y'all. He didn't even win for y'all.
and the crazy thing is, Cam, even last week when they were doing that like, stupid tiers list of quarterbacks, like some of the comments that some of the offensive people were saying about him, like it was all, you know, that was all code. That was all of that black code stuff.
From the
moment he came in, remember, what was it, the Izrahi or something like that, that dude that put that scouting report on him, it was all the code, all the coded language, all of that stuff that Cam has had to face, all of those things. And the funny thing about it is, one, I don't know. You know what? I'm slowly starting to realize that some of these celebrities, I won't say it's all, obviously, but some of these celebrities that, quote unquote, black Twitter starts riding for might just need to go ahead. They might not have Lucy's vision. That's one. Second, Because remember, we're following this up. This is following the Erykah Badu. There have been falls of Jill Scott. There have been falls from Grace. But the other thing about it is you are a quarterback. Like, let's just break it down by his position. You are a quarterback in the NFL. How many quarterbacks who are black even get the chance to be average? Average. And you're out here being like racism doesn't exist. Of all the positions. When we were talking about how you would be the second black quarterback to win a Super Bowl, all this other stuff. Of all the positions. How do you come and fix your mouth and your brain to utter and think that somehow racism is gone? It is beyond preposterous.
You know, I just saw White Chicks this weekend, and now I'm like convinced that Cam White Chicks this, where his mask came off and he's just a white blonde underneath, because it's the only thing that makes sense.
Yo, how I was about to go with
no racism is amazing in itself. Yeah. Let alone the position he's been in the past year.
I was going to go with alien abduction or, like, where they've taken over your body. So that's interesting that you said the White Chicks thing. I was thinking this is a – remember what they said Gucci Mane was a – that really was a clone.
They called Gucci Mane.
Yeah, they were saying
so
that.
Is this that
nigga
a
went
Cam
to jail
clone?
And got healthy.
Yeah. Gucci Mane and his belly are like on Venus somewhere. And this new nigga is like, I eat grapes and cucumbers. Grapes. So maybe this isn't Cam, or it's the shell of him.
They're slowly infecting us, slowly taking over the pod people. There it is.
We have a special guest here, and I'm going to let him introduce himself.
Hey, what's happening? I go by the name of JQuest, and I'm from Frisco, California. All right.
Hey, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us. I know you had some things going on, and we wanted to bring you on the show and let you have a chance to talk about them. So I guess, you know, let everybody know who you are and tell them about your project.
All right, Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. Like I said, my name is JQuest. I go by JQuizzy as well. I'm an upcoming artist out of San Francisco, California. Just proud to be dropping my first EP. You know, doing it for the love of the game, but also an old rookie in the game. I have a 5-song EP. It's produced fully by Postsafe, who's actually coming out of St. Louis. And I have guest features from Malls out of North Carolina, signed to Russell Records. I also have my man Jay Lely. And my dude Dave Canal is actually part of my Outbound SF family. Right here in Frisco.
Nice, you got the whole country covered there.
Yeah, I was trying to get, you know, a little bit out of my region. You know, North Carolina and the South, we have a little bit of love for them out there in Frisco because of the way that our tape circulated. Honestly, the way the African American community came out to Frisco was through the South. You know, it was a route. So when we grew up out here, like if you listen to our rappers, our slang and our drawl is similar. Like, you know, you hear the early stuff from Scarface, UGK, and even Master P. I mean, he got a lot of game from us out here.
Nice. So if someone's never heard your music, what song would you want to point them to first as an example of, you know, what you are about?
I would either point them to Son of a City Worker or Hop a Boy. You know, Hop a Boy is a single. Son of a City Worker will give you a more of an intimate look as to who I am as a person, where I'm coming from.
Dope, man. And also, just to bridge you into the family, how exactly did you find out about us? How'd you end up checking out the show?
I had been 12 followers with Lucy on Twitter for quite a while. So if folks don't know, you know, J_Quizzy@twitter.com, you know. I don't know, like, how long we've probably been following for a while. I think we have, like, mutual, like, Twitter friends. So, you know, just good taste, you know, game recognized game.
Yeah, Lucy's the shit, so.
Well.
We happy to have her around here.
You know, it's you know. Wednesdays with Lucy, you know?
It is. Even with the Nigerian slander, we still love her.
I mean, you know, I'm a mixed kid, so I get it. You know, I'm always bugging her. Yo, when we going to talk about black and Asian people, if we're going to not talk about black people, we're going to talk about Asian people today?
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's a whole different... Yeah, we have to do a
whole
different...
new can of worms, I know.
Right?
Yeah, that's a ball game right there, man.
we also talk about, and I have no problem, we talk about when Asian people want to be included in POC and stand up. You know, I mean, here in the Bay, we're proactive.
All right, so I guess I'll open up the floor to my other co-host here.
Well, I did just want to quickly, like you mentioned, the whole Asian... perspective. Do you particularly have anything you want to tell our listeners about how it is being, you know, like an Asian American, like I'm assuming you're first generation?
I'm second generation over here, so my mom's the first generation.
Okay. Yeah. And just how that is and how that affects your interactions. Especially in such a culturally diverse place. How has, you know, having that Asian heritage impacted...
That's not a problem.
...how you interact, you know what I'm saying, with the black community there or the hip-hop community there? How has that influenced where you fit in or finding a place to fit in?
For me, like I said, I mean, growing up, like, you know, we had African-American friends growing up, even from just playing ball in the inner city community, but I would say it was different, like, for me to, you know, show my cousins that, you know, half of my friends were from the projects over here because I played ball with them and I rapped in the cyphers. You know, not everybody in the Asian community was sure how to approach that because they didn't always come from my walk of life. I would say that class played a big role of it. You know, I grew up in Section 8, so just kind of, you know, putting on like that as far as went to the park, you had to come hard at the playing basketball, you know, you had to spit your illest rhyme, you know, everything's like an Olympics out there in the neighborhood. Whereas when you go to a more middle-class Asian community, it's kind of, they're kind of to themselves. They're not sure exactly, you know, why you're rocking your ball cap sideways, you know, in the early 90s. Why you're spitting rhymes or writing poetry on the bus or interested in, you know, taking pictures of graffiti before it was something cool on Instagram.
Amwan, you got anything for our guest?
I don't know if I have a question to ask, but I do. I appreciate what you said about the Asian, involving the Asian community and a lot of the protesting that's going on right now. And I think I had noticed a little bit more of the involvement that's been happening, particularly, like you said, in the Bay Area. So I do think it's really important to, like you said, challenge them to become as involved as possible because, you know, obviously they are a part of what's happening. Also, I also appreciate your mentioning how the impact of the Bay Area in hip hop, because I think a lot of that is overlooked in a sense. Because I think you know, when we do talk about the Bay Area of, you know, in hip hop, a lot of times, you know, it's just it's like on Twitter, it's likely just going to be E40 slander and E40 jokes and all that. So it's just like, okay, yeah, the jokes are funny and all, but yeah, the Bay Area has definitely impacted hip hop, you know, in terms of style and lyricism and as well as actual terminology. The Bay Area has had a lot to do with that. So I appreciate you mentioning that too.
No, I mean, likewise, I mean, I appreciate the nod, you know, I mean, I try not to go on forever, but I mean, people forget about hieroglyphics and Souls of Mischief, you know, putting on, like, total, leaving a major label and going on for themselves to create Hyro Imperium and creating a whole style of hip-hop that back then there was no trail for, or even the fact that someone was going to go independent, and to this day now in Oakland, you know, they're doing a whole high road day where they shut down a whole part of Oakland legally in the city and put on a whole event for families, you know? Like, who does that? But it's underlooked because, you know, today in mainstream radio, that's just not what's, you know, vying for major dollars or You talk about Master P having to come up and learn how to independently hustle for what he learned for No Limit Records up here in Richmond with JT the Bigger Figure. You know, you look into like somebody like San Quentin. There's a lot of artists here in San Francisco, sure, that are, you know, that gangster style, but as far as the independent hustle and learning how to put your business together as well as your music, I mean, we're really proud of that. That's something that myself try to carry on as a mold, you know. As far as, you know, representing as far as a PLC, yeah, I mean, also, you know, a part of it has to do with my background being that you go to Hawaii where my mom lives, you know, Chinese people definitely see themselves as people of color because the roots are a little stronger sometimes out there. And they forget, you know, they forget that there definitely was a coalition of, like, you know, Chinese people for Black Panthers and whatnot in the Bay. You know, we got, I guess, got comfortable. You know, money got good, middle class got created in, you know, the 80s and 90s, and now that, you know, things are changing with gentrification really hitting in SF and the Bay Area, you know, it's definitely time for people to wake up.
Totally agree.
It's very dope stuff, man. We appreciate it. Do us a favor and just let the family know one more time, you know, how they can find you on social media, find your music, everything, how they can contact you.
Definitely. You can hit me on Twitter, J_Quizzy, or you can find me on Instagram, one word, JQuizzy. You can find me on bandcamp.com/JQuizzy, and that's where you can download my EP for free. It's called Son of a City Worker. Shout out to Backseat Productions. Shout out Outbound SF. You can also find me on Snapchat if that's your dig. J.Quizzy.
All right, brother, we appreciate it, and we appreciate the, you know, the history lesson on the Bay Area. You definitely introduced some elements that, you know, me being from the East Coast and some of us being from the Midwest and all different parts of the country, man, there's definitely some interesting tidbits in there that I didn't even know about. So we appreciate you, you know, stopping by and then dropping a little knowledge for the family.
No, much love to y'all. I enjoy your podcast, you know, y'all doing your thing, and, you know, thank you for putting on for the independence.
Thanks, brother. We appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Much love.
Aloha. All right, man. Peace.
All right. Hello, family. Time for our minute. You know what? Let's go ahead and work west to east. Start off with the angriest. Let me send that to the angry African.
So my minute is a little bit inspired by the Olympics, because I know a lot of us have been watching the Olympics and being very proud of what our brethren and sisters have been doing out there. And one of the things that caught my eye that happened recently was the gymnastics event when they were on the balance beam. And as most of you know, in our balance beam, I think it was a girl from Sweden, I don't remember her name, won the gold. Lauren Hernandez won the silver, and Simone Biles took the bronze. Now, the thing that bothered me about it was, given what these athletes do on that balance beam, which is one of the most incredible things athletically that I could ever see, is their routines are so so intricate, and there's also the athletic ability on display when they do a bunch of the flips and the tumbling, I'll say, on there. It surprises me when someone who doesn't do a whole lot of that wins the gold. And I was like, okay, the lady that won the gold did a lot of twirling and some ballet stuff and maybe did like three flips. But you have these girls like Lauren Hernandez, she must have done like 10 flips on this thing without issue and couldn't beat her. That stunned me. And I don't want to take, you know, any respect away from the girl who won. And it was the first time I think that country had won, and since, like, I don't know, I think they said like the 20s or something like that. So it's been forever. But I was a little bit taken aback by that. I thought they cheated Lauren Hernandez that night. I thought she should have won that gold. I wouldn't have minded the other girl winning, you know, obviously winning the silver or something like that. But I just think, given that these girls like Lauren Hernandez are just flipping their ass off on that thing, hitting on it without issue. To see someone just do a couple of twirls on there, which I'm sure is very difficult. I'm sure it is. But these girls are flipping on that shit. So, I don't know. But, yeah, I thought Lauren Hernandez got cheated. I thought she should have won that gold. And that's my minute.
I'll go next because I'll keep it in the Olympic spirit. One, first things first, shout out to all of us. Y'all know that the opening ceremonies is usually what I like to call the World's Day. The opening ceremony for the Summer Olympics. Winter Olympics, not so much. But opening ceremonies of the Summer Olympics, hey, that might be the only time for some of us that our countries make it on TV. So I will always, there is nothing that gets in the way of me watching the opening ceremonies of the Olympics, especially now since we all complained because the big thing used to be that NBC, if you were in America, would go to commercial and you would have to hope that they would get to Senegal and then all of a sudden cut off and you'd be like, yo, please, please come back, all right, before you get to some kind of SM country, okay? Because Sierra Leone being a commercial break. Luckily now, they heard from us third worlders, appreciate all of us coming together, so now they show all the countries. But my minute, besides that, it really is not going to be 2 minutes, is on Simone Manuel. I was surprised at how much it touched me seeing her not only win, but her reaction to it. And I'm not saying I was surprised, just because I know the history of how in this country, pools were one of the most segregated places and continue to be. You go to places now and you go to pools, even at hotels. Black people show up at a pool and all of a sudden those white people that were there will leave. You go to swim clubs. You go to places where there's a disparity in the care of pools. So it was huge. I remember Cullen Jones winning that gold in that relay. I remember that. That was in 2008 on that 4x1 freestyle. And it's huge in that way that the significance of her, and she recognized the significance of, there aren't that many people like me to get to this point. Thankfully, the U.S. Olympic team this year has actually two, I think Leah Neal also, two black swimmers on it and two black American swimmers. But the significance in the larger context, this is an arena where it has continued. There's a continual effort to limit access to resources and to just be around, as though being in the same water with those who are black will somehow sully you or dirty you or something. Because honestly, that's the only impression that you can really get. Or somehow to bring the value of the experience down or so forth. So I am very happy that I'm very happy in the accomplishment of her not only meddling but winning. I am also hoping that it continues to spur the conversation on in terms of bringing a spotlight of what is happening. Because this is not a black people issue. It's not something where it's black people are an issue. It is, no, oh my gosh, they're sharing the same border as us. We need to put a stop to this. Or we need to go away. So hopefully I'm not the type of person who actually just naively believes that this is suddenly going to spur change. I don't think it's going to. You know, most times it does the opposite. But hopefully it shows people like, hey, this shit is fucked up. It continues to happen. Maybe we ought to do something about it. It's a hope. I don't think I believe in it, but it's a hope. That's my time.
My minute's pretty short, and I just wanted to share something that, you know, brought me some happiness this week, and that's just do something nice for someone. I realized that just taking the time to smile at somebody if they're, you know, kind of looking down and not trying to, like, make that long eye contact. Like, mate, when you force it and you just, like, you smile, you, like, force them to smile, you don't know if, like, they're going to take that smile, like, with them the rest of the day. Or instead of, like, rapidly pressing the closed door button in the elevator so nobody can get the fuck on with you, like, letting the doors close naturally such that someone who is in a rush to get on it can get on it and ride the elevator with you and maybe say hi to that person. Maybe you will get them to a meeting faster and that changes the course of their day and they have a kick-ass day because you ain't closed the fucking elevator door on them. Little things. Those aren't meaningful things, but you never know like how that will affect someone's day. So my minute is just do something nice for someone. That's it. That's my minute.
All right. So last but certainly not least, the East Coast Nigerian.
All right. So it's similar to the theme of Francis is except it won't be. Whew, that was Shakespearean, bro. But just in general, black women have been fucking magic at this Olympics. So amazing. As recently as three American women sweeping in track and field. Like, just fantastic. Women have been fucking awesome, but black women specifically, Simone Biles, Simone Mayo, Gabby Douglas, like, all these people out here doing fucking amazing things. And then you go further. You got Katie Ledecky, you got Michael Phelps doing amazing things. Like, everybody was just fucking fantastic, but I really just wanted to specifically give some props to the black women that are out here because they busted their asses to get into that position and they motherfucking took advantage and they did their goddamn thing. So salute to you black women because in every walk of life you fucking excel and I appreciate you. And that's it.
All right, well, thanks, family, for joining us for another show. You can find this episode and every other episode of the Chicken Jollof Rice Show on our website, www.cnjrshow.com. You can also listen to every episode of CNJR Show on SoundCloud, Google Play, iTunes, Podomatic, and Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at CNJR Show. On our Twitter page, you will see all of the co-host at names, and you can also email us at any time at our email cnjrshow@gmail.com. Please remember throughout the show you've heard a couple of great offers for you that not only keep our show free but also provide some great things that I'm sure you can use, family. So on behalf of my fellow co-host, I wish you a great week. And we'll be talking to you soon. Peace. Beautiful rain, don't disturb me. Beautiful rain, oh come, never come. Oh come, never come. Oh come to me, beautiful rain.